morning. I think there's no coincidences. And tomorrow is Parshas Yisroi, and Yisroi was the first one who established the judicial system in Klal Yisrael. It's probably appropriate to be speaking about Bezdin matters today. What's interesting is that Yisroi, in his description of the qualities that were needed for a Dayan, put in Chechayil, people who are Yerushamayim. However, there's one quality that he didn't put in, but Moshe Rabbeinu did put in. And that is, in Dvorim, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Chachomim Unevoinim. And there's no doubt about it that in order for someone to adjudicate a case in the Beis Din, you must have both the Midah of Chochmah and Nevoinah, Tzvunah. But today what I'm going to be speaking about is a issue which is probably important for anybody who ever has to face a Beis Din, and that is evidence before the Beis Din. What constitutes evidence in a Beis Din? It's I'm not going to be speaking about how a civil court looks at it, because in the civil court even the term evidence refers to a different thing, and evidence in the civil court is when a Baal Din, when one of the plaintiff or the respondent gives his case, and he says what's called, what we call edus in inverted commas, that's also called giving evidence, and yet that's not a halachic view of evidence at all. We'll soon get to that. But in order to understand this issue of evidence in the Beis Din, and evidence in the Beis Din is, first of all, what constitutes evidence in the Beis Din, and secondly, what weight do you give to evidence, and to which evidence? Because there are different types of things that can be called referred to as evidence, and they have a different weight. And lastly, evidence has to be tested in the Beis Din. You cannot just accept evidence as it is. It must be tested to determine its truth. But there are several hakadomas, several prerequisites. I first have to start before we begin discussing this, because it's important to know where you want to go before you decide how you get there. The verse that we start is a Rambam in Perek Chof Dalet Mehilchas Sanhedrin. The Rambam explains that this is probably one of the most fundamental rules in Choshe Mishpat, is how a Dayan decides something. What's the basis for it? Is it only on the evidence, or is there something more? And the Rambam says as follows. Yesh l'dayin lodin dine momenos al pi hadvorim shedaitin noitelehen shehin emes. A person, a Dayan, when he is deciding a civil matter, dinim omenus, he has to decide, and this is the key issue, he has to decide what he thinks is the truth. In his mind, if evidence appears in front of him, even though it looks solid, yet he feels that it's not right. And the Rambam continues, the hadover chozok belibo. His heart says to him, this is something strange. I can't put my finger on it. I know that there's something suspicious. The Dayan has to be very careful not to paskin only according to the evidence if his heart is not in it. He says, Avapi, he says, She'emi shom raya brura. Even though there's no clear proof, nevertheless, the Dayan must think what he believes is the emes. The Ein Tzarech Loimar, definitely, he says, Im hu yodea bevadai she'adover kein. If he knows something on his own, he knows that it's true, even if it's not on evidence that has come up in the Beis Din, but he knows that it's a true, he cannot go against what he thinks is true. And the Rambam gives a various examples. I'm not going to go into all the examples, but the Rambam then asks the following question. He says, if that's the case, lomo hitzricha Torah shnei edim. We know that the cardinal rule of evidence is al pishnayim edim yokum dover. If that's the case, then why is it that the Torah required shebizman sheyovo lifnei hadayin shnei edim yodun al pi eduson af al pishen yodea im beemes heido ebesheker. Rambam says that if he's not sure, then the evidence of the Torah said to put in to Adam. Now, and this is a very important principle, because it underlies the whole the idea of how a Dayan has to decide something. He cannot just look at the evidence, as I would say, from a purely factual point of view. He has to decide in his heart. Ramban continues, Kol elu hadvorim hein ikar hadin. This was the Avon Misharobu, Bati Din She'enen Hagunin. However, as time passed, there were Bati Din that weren't so scrupulous in their dedication to the truth. And even if they were right in, as far as their deeds were concerned, but they weren't so clever, or they didn't have so much seichel. He says that we have to modify this a bit. And the Rambam gives a simple case. He says, if somebody, in terms of a shvua is concerned, that you feel that it should have been the one to do it, is you're looking at the case and you say to yourself, this man is claiming something. I don't believe him, though. I want him to make a shvua, even though he is the claimant. It's called lehapoch hashvua, lo yahapchu hashvua elibaraya brur. So this is nowadays, unless you have clear evidence in front of you, you don't do so. So that's the first principle where the Rambam says, and this is, by the way, not only Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch also, when he brings this in, also says that Dayanim have to use their judgment. He says, the Shulchan Aruch, Tezvov, Sifhei, says, Yesh l'dayin lodin dini momenos, al pi hadvorim shedai tinoit bem shem emes v'adov v'chotuk liwa. Literally the words of the Rambam, etc. So that is the first principle that we start, that at the end of the day, you pashut have to convince the Bezdin that you're right. It's not enough necessarily to bring proof. You've got to you have to actually convince them. However, there are certain, of course, basic principles in halacha that you cannot get away from. And in any civil matter, whenever you're dealing in a financial matter, the first issue is who is the muzik and who is the mosi. Who is in possession? Because we have a klal gadol in halacha, hamotzi mechaveroi olov haraya, that the plaintiff, the one who wants to get the money, he's got to bring the raya. There's a whole machlokes in the Gemara. Where is this? Where do we know this from? The Gemara Baba Kama gives several sources. One of the sources they bring from the Gemara says mibal dvorim yigash aleihem. Who's the one who wants to do something? In other words, the plaintiff. He's the one who wants to cause the action. He wants to satisfy himself. He's got to bring the raya. The Sifri has another pasuk. It says ushpatetem b'tzedek. So the Sifri says that tzadik b'tzidkoi toivoi. The claimant has to prove it. And there's one opinion in the Gemara that says it's a svara. Rav Ashi says it's actually it's a svara. Be that as it may, the first issue at hand is who is the muzik and who is the motzi. Normally, it's not too difficult to decide. Usually, it's the muzik who doesn't want to come to Bezdin and it's the motzi who doesn't want to come to the Bezdin. So, almost invariably, the muzik will be the respondent and the plaintiff will be the motzi. But it's not always the case because very often they come into Bezdin thinking that, well, I'm the muzik and therefore I'm in a stronger position, and then you don't find out that what you thought is really muzik is really not muzik. That you may think that you are in possession, but you halakhically are not in possession. But that is the principle that you have to start with. Who is the muzik and who is the motzi? Now, if we say hamotzi mechaveo olav araya, so the question is, what constitutes, and this is what we really want to speak about today, what constitutes araya? Now, in the ideal world, if you had two al-pishnayim eidim, you'd have two kosher witnesses, two adult males from a yidden that would come in and see exactly what happened, that would be the ideal case. That's very rare in the real world to have two from a yidden who actually saw Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and he said this would be the time to pay back. It's the ideal world. It's not in the real world. It doesn't happen too often. In fact, The other category, which is an eid echa, to have one witness, is also fairly rare to actually have to have a witness. If you have that, then it's fine. But very, very often, though, you don't have exactly, you don't either have witnesses on the exact issue, you have witnesses that are on a peripheral issue, or you don't have witnesses at all, but you have documentary evidence. You have what constitutes a shtar, or you have pieces of paper, and then the Beis Din, of course, has to put together a composite picture to understand what they believe actually happened. And what's important for the Beis Din to understand is that it can't just be a hashara. It can't just be, well, we think that this is right. In order to be motzi mamon, in order to be able to take money from Reuven and give it to Shimon, the Beis Din has to have very, a very strong umdina. We'll discuss what that is. It has to have a very strong presumption to be motzi mamon. However, there are several issues, though, before we get into the case of extraneous evidence. Even in discussing the claim itself, there are cases where it's important to establish what the claim is, because when the claim itself sometimes can have enough evidence, and I use the word evidence carefully, where the claim itself can actually be strong enough to be motzi mamon. Of course, if there's a confession, if a person admits that he owes the money, then they have the din of hodas baldin kemeya edim dami. That helps. That's from experience. It rarely happens that you have a complete admission. Sometimes you have what's called by the way an admission. In other words, he didn't realize that he admitted something in the course of his evidence. But that again is not too common. However, there are cases where someone can have what we'll discuss, a migoy or a peshaosa. A migoy is where he could have had a stronger claim and he'd used a weaker claim. Now, normally the halacha is migo lahotzi lo amrina, which means that if I want to rely on a claim, even if it's a good claim and it has the evidence of migoy, we say migo lahotzi, it's not enough yet to be motzi mamon. There is one opinion of the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch that says that we do say Migalahotzi, but the general halacha, normative halacha, is that Migalahotzi lo amrin. So what are the normal cases? And what if you don't have Edim, and we'll discuss it, and you don't have a shtar, because a shtar, a document that will have been signed by the two witnesses, has the power of Edim, well, what do you have then? Then we have what's called an umdina. An umdina is, is a presumption. Or there might be a chazaka, and we'll discuss in a minute what the difference is between the two. But when people come into the Beis Din, and this is the thing, the first thing is, before you bring any aid in, before you bring any evidence, it's important for the Beis Din to hear the case, the outline of the case, to understand what is needed. In fact, the halacha is that even if you do have Edim, you don't bring Edim in while the claim is being is either being put forward or a response is putting. It's only later on, after you've heard the claim and the response, that you can actually call for the Edim. Now, there's when we discuss the issue of evidence. We're going to get to evidence, so we're going to get to the claim itself. There is a procedure that has to be followed. The Beis Din will hear the claim. It'll hear the response. It will then ask, of course, are there any witnesses? So the first thing the Beis Din has to do is you have to call the witnesses. Well, who calls the witness? Who is the toveya of the witness? First of all, by the way, there is an obligation on a witness himself to testify. That is a halacha. If somebody knows edus for another person, there's a mitzvah to testify for that person. Im lo yagid v'nosa avono, or some learn out even that it's from the mitzvah of hashavas aveda. Some say, it's a question of lo samur al dam re'echlo, the obligation to testify. But if the party doesn't want to come, which is quite often, then even according to halacha, the Beis Din has a right to subpoena a witness to come. And the Pesach Teshuva says that the Beis Din can actually order a person to come. And but who to call? In fact, in Shulchan Aruch brought down a case where they used to make a public announcement and issue a cheirim against anybody who knew evidence and didn't come. And today, in today's circumstances, we're not going to issue chum, but the Beis Din can put out an order for a specific person to come. When the person comes to say Eidus, now in the civil court, the nohug is, in all civil jurisdictions, is to be mashbiyah the Eidim, to make them swear, take an oath or an affirmation that they're telling the truth. In halacha, you don't have to do that. Usually it's enough. The halacha is you're ma'ayim the Eidim. You threaten them or warn them. In our business, we have a series of dibris on top of my chair, and I just slightly point to this losan of riacha eid shoker. Remember that it's part of the aseres hadibris to say false eidus. Sadly to say, it doesn't always work. People do come in and say a false eidus. However, in certain circumstances, if the Beis Din suspects that they're lying, the Beis Din has the power to make them swear that it to be mashbiyah an eid. Now, when the eidus comes, it's important, a number of rules about the eidim. Number one, the eidim have to say the evidence to the Beis Din orally. You cannot send in a witness statement and decide that that's enough. The halacha is mipihem velo mipiksavam. The Beis Din has to actually hear the witnesses. In fact, they're supposed to understand the language of the witnesses. The issue of a translator is difficult. They must hear it and not see it. There are poskim that say that in difficult circumstances, what you can do is the aide can actually write down his testimony and then orally say, "I affirm that everything that I have written is true," and that will be considered mipiham velomi piksavam. It's a day yechida that can be relied on, but usually it's not what we do. We want them to actually say the eidus. And one of the advantages of having them say the eidus bal peh is that the Beis Din has then an opportunity to test their evidence. Now, originally, in the times of the Torah says v'darashta v'chakarta, that you should make drishas and chakiras and bedikas. And originally, the system was that when witnesses came in, they were actually asked various questions, sheva chakiras. They were asked what year and what shemitah did it happen, what time of the day, etc., etc. What is important is, though, that today we don't do that. The reason is that because they realized that it would disrupt commerce altogether. Every time somebody would be a witness to a financial transaction, he would know if he comes into the Beis Din, there's a whole Tino Delos with Nihaloven that it was taken apart. Nevertheless, the Beis Din is still required, and I'll speak about it in a second, to cross-examine the witness to make sure that the witness is telling the truth. What I neglected to say was that it's all, besides the fact that the Eidim have to say their Eidus and the Dinim, they have to stand, it's also important that there should be somewhat of a judicial setting. The apostle can speak about a case where at a fair, at a public area, somebody said Eidus in front of Dayanim, a couple of Dayanim. That doesn't count. The Dayanim have to sit down, even if it's going to take place in a and the Yiddish they say provisorge, ad hoc situation. The ad hoc situation, they must declare, we're sitting as a Beis Din now. But if they don't sit as a Beis Din, it's no good. I know of a case of a certain Beis Din that was rushing to do something, and the Dayanim were in a car, and they decided that they'll take evidence from the witness in the car itself. Now, there was two problems with it. Number one, the witness wasn't standing. But most important, they didn't actually declare that we are now sitting as a Beis Din. And that is important that they have to put that down. Now, when they test the evidence, they have to ask the questions. The Radbo was once asked, how does a Beis Din know? It says that you have to be done din emes la'amito. What is emes la'amito? It says the Beis Din have to keep on asking questions until they are actually satisfied to what is the truth. Now, one question is often asked, is it only the Beis Din to do it, or can people come into a Beis Din, can the other party do it? And the answer is yes. Or if you have a solicitor, a lawyer, a barrister, you want to cross-examine, that can be done. However, the job, the onus, the requirement of the cross-examination has to be done under the aegis of the Beis Din. And in fact, even though in halacha there's not too much, you don't find in halacha the traditional sources, can a Beis Din decide which question yes and which question not? In today, in the Bote Din, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where there's Takanot Bote Adin, there also is it's quite categorically that Beis Din can decide which questions will be allowed and which questions will not be allowed. But the main thing is that it's important that the Beis Din has to be satisfied at the end of the day that they know the truth. And in fact, the Marik says that Beis Din should only listen to the Tainus, because very often the Tainus have been set up very neatly by a lawyer or by a Tohen Rabbani, and the Tainus themselves will get you nowhere, because their Tainus have been set up to lead the Beis Din down a different path than it's the truth. The Beis Din has to try to determine itself where the truth lies. There is a problem that every Beis Din in the world faces, and that is this. Especially if the plaintiff or respondent is not represented by any legal terms, and that is, how much can the Beis Din assist in helping the plaintiff or the respondent in their claim? Now, here the problem is that we're faced with two halachos that appear as if they contradict each other. On the one hand, we know there's a halacha, al pas atzmecha ke'orchei hadayonim, that Beis Din is supposed to act as the Beis Din and not as one of the parties represented. So it's a beferish iser. On the other hand, you have another rule called tzach picha le'ilem, which means that if the person can't really present his case and he's stumbling over things, the lotion of the Ram is mutal l'sado me'at, you can help him a bit. To get him going. So there's a very large gray area between these two things. At what point is it considered psach picha le'ilem, and at what point is it considered tas atzmecha ke'orcha dayonim? And there is no hard and fast rule. It depends very much on the yerushimayim of the dayonim to make sure that they don't overstep that rule, the psach picha, to come into a tas atzmecha or chedion. But when they test that evidence, they begin cross-examining the edim, the cross-examination should continue until they are satisfied. Now, very often, the halacha is that the parties have to be present during cross-examination. And it makes sense, because the one who will know the best questions to ask, really, is the other party themselves. The Beis Din, no matter how good a Beis Din is, the Beis Din will always be limited, because they don't know exactly what happened. So they will not always know what questions are the best to ask. And in that sense, it's important for the Beis Din to get the parties to assist them in the cross-examination. Which brings us, though, the issue, however, is one thing that you cannot cross-examine, and that's when you have documentary evidence shows. Now, there's a shaila in the poskim. Why is a shtar not considered mipihem below mipi ksoho? Very famous question asked by many of the Rishonim. We know that a shtar is good. There are two types of shtars. The shtar of a ksav yad. Shtar of ksav yad is when a person writes out in his own handwriting, I borrowed money from you on this such and such a date, and I will have to return it. But then there's the classical shtar is where it's signed by the two witnesses. And there are a number of terutzim in the Rishonim. The Rambam's opinion is that the shtaros are only midah rabbanon. Shtaros are not midah oraisa. Rabbeinu Tam was of the opinion that din mipihem v'lo mipi ksavam doesn't mean that you can't write your ayis. It just means that somebody who can't, elam, somebody who is not able to talk, he's precluded from giving evidence. But everyone else is. Even though the halacha is not like the Rabbeinu Tam, actually in certain circumstances that poskim have been makel to use the Rabbeinu Tam's opinion for, in the case of the Talmud Chacham, it says, but usually it's we don't pass that Rabbeinu Tam. And others, there's another teretz from the Baal Hamor that it's not really, since the shtar was given on the instructions of the respondent, so it's not really mipik sovam, it's mipik sovay. Nevertheless, whatever the various terutzim in the Rishonim, a shtar is effective. The problem of a shtar is, a shtar, you cannot cross-examine a shtar. But what must be determined is that the shtar is authentic, that it's not forged, and that it's and that the signatures are authentic. And in din, the halacha is that the bezin has to be satisfied that the signatures are authentic. One of the ways we do it is what's called kiyum shtaris, which means that we actually have to verify it by either bringing in two witnesses who testify that this is their signature, either those witnesses or others, or it has to be the bezin themselves would know it, or if they have another sample of their handwriting, they can compare those two. But it would bring me up to the last point, because even if we have a shtar, as I mentioned before, not every shtar will tell the whole story. The shtar may be just one piece of evidence. And going back to what we started off, we said a bezdin has to be satisfied that that something happened, and they have to believe in it themselves. This is the most important issue. And let's say there is no absolute proof. So I told you there is a thing, there is a situation called an umdana and a chazaka. Now the umdana means that what an umdana is based on life experience of what really happens. This is probably the best way to describe it. That you, if someone is in the commercial world, someone is involved in a certain type of business, very often he may not even have to hear every single part of a deal to be able to work out on his own what the rest of the story happened. That's true in every field. That is based on life experience. And an umdana means that there has to be a logical presumption that such and such a thing happened. And therefore, the bezin is the same way. The bezin can put together enough evidence. If the evidence is so strong, the evidence is so convincing to the bezin that actually such and such a thing happened, then the bezin is allowed to work on that. But it has to be quite convincing evidence. In the same way, there are certain chazokas, certain presumption, like the Gemara says in Babasha, there's a rule called Chazoka Einodam Porea Tok Zmanui, which means that nobody pays before he has to pay. So if you had a case where Reuven said that I paid back Shimon before the time, we have a presumption to say that that's not true, and it can have an effect on various other documents. There is one last thing, and the question is, how much can we rely on documents that the civil court relies on? Because this we run into the issue of dinar malchusa dina, or the Gemara's term is shtaris ha'olim ba'arkaos shel akum. A shtar, a civil document that is accepted by the civil authorities and that works under the category of dinar malchusa dina is a powerful document indeed. Because once someone has that shtar of the and that entitles them to al pidinu machus adina, he is effectively a muhzik. And as I said at the beginning, one of the most important principles to establish is who is the muhzik. The dinu machus adina allows you to be considered a muhzik, and Bezdin cannot ignore that point. Now there are countries, not dinu machus adina may not apply in every single country. And I won't elaborate on that. And Dina Mahusa Dina has also limitations on what it applies. That doesn't apply. Does it apply on normal standard commercial documents, the Machlokes HaPoskim, whether that it does or it doesn't, or does it apply only to documents that are based on the on dealing with the government? But since the consensus of Poskim today is that Dina Machus Dina does apply to what applies to Sochrim, these documents are important, and they are an invaluable aid to the Bezdin into deciding who is the Muzik and who is actually telling the truth.